My name is Cheryl McQuaid. I'm in the Labor Relations Conference Room on August 16th, 2005. It's 9:58 a.m. I'm here with Robert Fell, who's going to talk to us a little bit about his history at Fisher Body.
Yeah, my name's Bob Fell. Male. I'm married. 4 children. 6 grandchildren. We got 2 on. You want me to go through this whole thing?
No. I'd like to know a little bit about the day you hired in. What date did you
hire? I hired in twice here at Fisher Body in October of 1979. Worked 89 days in, so just prior to getting my 90 days where I had the protection of the union, I got laid off, as many people did at that time. I then rehired again in 1981, March 27th. Worked in the trim shop both times I hired in here. Worked with Doug Rademacher sitting right over here in the trim shop. Worked the production line down there for about 3 years. After that, we had a layoff, an extensive remodeling of the plant. I came back after a leveling off to the paint shop. Worked in M paint repair system, learned how to repair cars as a utility person. That was one of the better jobs I've had in a long time. Besides repair, we would work in small parts. Left that system, went to the opposite system in paint repair also. And over there we covered the paint mix distribution group and paint repair. Worked with a lot of fine people in those areas. After probably 9 years in paint repair, position for the paint shop safety advisor opened up. I applied for that, received that job, did that for a number of years, representing safety for the paint shop. Very rewarding job. From there, I was probably noticed by other members of the union. After several years of the advisor job, I was appointed to the UAW health and safety position by Richard Shoemaker. So I've had that job probably 7 years now to the current time. Anything else?
Would you say most of your time has been on the day shift or the afternoon shift?
Afternoon shift. I've been mostly an afternoon shift worker with a few visits to day shift. The stretch I'm on right now, because of the plant closing, all the activities are on days. I'm on the day shift now. So there's been it's been kind of a change at home, because after 24 years on night shift, now to be home. So there was a lot of TV programs I've never seen, so just because they were always on in the evening. So it's been quite a change.
And can you tell me what your favorite job was?
I'd say the one I'm in currently, representing safety for workers, is the most rewarding. You get some heartfelt thank yous from a lot of people. Sometimes when you least expect it, but that's been quite rewarding to do that, to know that you're actually making a difference in people's safety and health.
Now, you said that you started out, was it in trim?
Yes.
When you first hired in?
Trim shop.
What job did you do in trim?
First job I had in trim on in 1979 was on the 88-98 line. They gave me a butter knife to clean excess urethane off the cars. I lost a knife one time. This was on my second day of work. Figured I better report it right away. He says, we'll go up to the cafeteria and get another one. So I went up to the cafeteria, found some big cook up there. I said, I need a butter knife. And they said, you can't have a butter knife. And I thought, I was really worried about what was going to happen then. So I went, I just hid for a while until she went back in the kitchen. I went and grabbed the butter knife and ran back downstairs. So that's what I did. I cleaned off the urethane off the windows.
And then you went into, after the changeover, the model change, you went into the paint department. Do you remember the job that you did there?
Went right into paint repair, and I learned all aspects of paint repair work, how to paint cars, how to repair cars, prep cars for repainting. That was pretty rewarding. I did that for quite a number of years. As utility, you cover different positions, so different people doing different jobs. And not only that, you get the opportunity to work throughout the paint shop on other days, different types of operations. So that was rewarding. That was a good job. Good people up there.
Anybody that you remember that just great memories, practical jokes?
Too many to even think about. We used to, a lot of guys on the sea line, we were all had a good sense of humor every day. Lots of jokes played back and forth. A lot of them have retired and moved on, you know, and you kind of lose track of a lot of them, but awful lot of people that made it enjoyable, in a sense, to come to work every day.
Another thing I'd like to touch on is your appointment with the UAW, the safety appointment from Mr. Shoemaker, is that what you said? Could you tell me a little bit about that?
That was a nice day. It was nice getting that letter and that appointment from Dick Shoemaker. That was with Chairman Doug Taylor and President Bernath at the local here. They, of course, had a lot to do with that. So I take that position very responsibly. Every now and then I meet with Mr. Shoemaker, gave me this job, and he's very... he's a very down-to-earth type person, but very strict in what he expects from his health and safety reps. We meet generally on a yearly basis, but I'm very honored to have that position.
Being in the safety department, I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes from the day you hired in to present day. Could you maybe comment on some of the changes that you've seen that you're particularly proud of?
It's a lot of changes in both the production world and the skilled trades world. Things that used to be considered kind of normal at one time, such as people would, when they first went into paint, would have paint on their arms or faces and stuff like that, and when they would use all sorts of solvents in the paint shop to clean themselves up. That practice has ended. If somebody were to do that, I mean, people would just look at you very strangely, like, and say something. But it used to be a routine type practice with people to do those kind of things. The safe handling of paint shop chemicals, that's changed quite a bit. People have gotten a lot smarter with education as to how to deal with those type of things. In the trades world, that's really changed dramatically, with training and constant reinforcement of rules, such as working at heights. At one time, tradesmen would think nothing of walking out on the beams or standing on the top rails of catwalks and things like that to reach things they had to. Now we have lifts throughout the plant, training programs, harnesses, lanyards. Engineering quite involved in how to eliminate the hazards that people have to go through. So there's some real rewarding programs, such as confined space. We used to be pretty hazardous in that area. Of course, we know we had fatalities at this plant involving confined spaces. So we have, I believe, some of the best confined space programs ever. It's tragic that it came out of those tragedies, but it had to happen. And even to this day, most people that involved in those spaces knew those men that died here. So that helps reinforce what we have to do together. It's been quite rewarding to be involved in it.
Bob, could you tell me a little bit more about confined space?
Confined space has been quite well studied in the safety industry. To know the facts right now of how many people die each year in this country, I don't have that in front of me, but there's terrible accidents involving confined spaces. Has a lot to do with the configuration of a space you're going into, the atmosphere of a space. So it could include anything such as vaults, pits, tanks, anything that a person could get themselves into. So because of the fatalities we've had at this facility, we take that very seriously as far as our program, identifying all the various confined spaces that we know of in the plant. We've identified several hundred confined spaces. We have some that we routinely go into, but then others very rarely do we enter. But we have a process that we follow before we go into any of the permit-required type spaces. Other spaces don't require a permit, that just may be a shallow drive pit of some sort. You could turn a non-permit type space into one if you're going to introduce something to that space that would put it into the category of permit. But it's a very serious program. It involves an awful lot of people, the industrial hygienist, the safety department, plant security, the workers, the supervisor. Everybody has to sign off. Everybody has to plan exactly what's going to happen when they go in to do that type of work. So we engineer as much as we can to take the hazards out of the work that has to be done in those places.
When you introduce something new to a confined space, what do you mean? Introduce a new employee, introduce a new chemical?
It may be a chemical that's going to change the atmosphere. It may be cutting and welding, putting excessive weld fumes into a space. It could be any number of things. So that's why you can't look at just going into a space. You have to look at every aspect of what's going to happen when people go in there. What's the plan? Not only do you have to plan that, you also have to plan how you're going to rescue people from that space. And speaking of that, I've been involved in a rescue team here for quite some time. That is some of the most difficult training that you'll ever take.
Would that be our emergency response team?
Yes, yes. There's a team in training this week, and obviously it won't be for this facility. It's going to be for the next facility. But that training has to continue, keep moving forward all the time. They're always changing things in the training as to what's going to, to improve training. But I would tend to think that outside of the military, this is some of the toughest training that a person can actually go through. It's done with Lansing Fire Department. You go down into very deep spaces, buried under the ground, very tight. You can't hardly maneuver yourself through some of the underground piping that you have to crawl through. So it takes people to their physical limits and to their psychological limits as to what you can put yourself through. So it's really, really good training. I've always been impressed by the training and our training folks that put it on.
So tell me, you said places underground. Are you talking about tunnels or?
It could be tunnels. You have tunnels under the ground, steam tunnels that run from this plant over to plant two. But mostly everything we have falls in lines of eliminator tanks, vaults, that type of thing.
Vaults, eliminator tanks, what are those?
Like eliminator tanks underneath the paint shop. That's where our fatalities happened years ago, back in 1983. And quite often in confined spaces, your fatalities are also rescuers. More people are killed trying to rescue someone else than actually, the original accident. And that's what happened here at this plant. Two people tried to rescue a third person, and they all became fatalities.
Why would the third person be there? Is it a tank where, like, fluids go, a holding tank, or I don't understand?
Yeah, this was a tank that all the paint sludge drains to. They drained the tank out, and then they found there was probably pockets of something that pushed the oxygen out of the tank, so it became an oxygen-deficient atmosphere is what happened. Very tragic.
And are there other areas in this plant that are that, well, with confined space, they're not that hazardous anymore, but there are a lot of those spaces in Fisher County.
Yes, there are, because hazards may not be of that type of thing. It could be an engulfment like in a water tank. There's quite a few different spaces that we just, like I said, there's a couple hundred that we've put down as permit required, meaning you have to have an entire plan from beginning to end before you go in.
How has the safety department affected the employees in the plant?
The nice thing about the safety department, it is one of our joint programs here at GM and then UAW-GM. It's, I think, a better program than maybe some of our counterparts do, the way it's designed. We have an equal number of management reps and UAW reps. At this facility, there's six of us total, three on each side. As a joint health and safety committee, we make all the final decisions involving safety in the facility here. It's made a tremendous impact because I truly believe that over time we've actually changed the safety culture in the plant. Things that people used to find acceptable as a work practice are not acceptable any longer. I see it in the workforce out there because they're understanding the safety culture and they're asking the appropriate type of questions. When they don't understand certain types of rules, they may understand parts of them, the rules they may not see have to deal with very often. We've made quite a few changes, such as the pedestrian walkways. People generally stay in those pedestrian walkways. But we're always challenged with new things coming forward, such as in our society with the use of cell phones now. Throughout the plant, now we're seeing the issue of people using cell phones. We've had to write some rules about it. The enforcement of rules is a little difficult because cell phones are so prevalent through society. We definitely don't allow them on industrial vehicles. A lot of people have a hard time with that. It's not our intention to be the safety cops, although we will be if we have to, but we prefer to treat everybody as our brothers and sisters and help them understand why these rules are in place and why they have to be enforced. It reminds me of one time when we had a tradesperson that was so upset by so many safety rules that he thought it was really hampering his job. Him and his committee man come to talk to me in my office. He couldn't understand why me, not being a tradesperson, understanding his trade, how I could come up with rules that affected him and his trade or other trades. And we had to go down to show that there's a lot of expertise that goes behind all these safety rules, down to the UAW-GM Health and Safety Center. Rules are based on government standards. He couldn't understand how the government could do that. What it finally boiled down to is every fatality that's ever happened in General Motors has a booklet, and that booklet has your name on it. And I have a whole locker full of these booklets. And I ended up having to just show them these booklets and said, these are the people that wrote the safety rules. And every one of them there. So that drove the point home that every single rule we have out there, there's someone paid for that rule. And rather it's talking on a cell phone, such as Chrysler just had a fatality due to somebody talking on a cell phone. Every rule has came from that type of place. But, yeah, it's very difficult talking to workers and explaining rules sometimes. It's very difficult. Some people take it as a personal assault on them. But generally, most of the time, you can kind of turn people around to see it your way. to realize that the rules are equal to everybody.
Bob, a question I forgot to ask you is, do you have any family that works in this plant?
I'm the last one of my family to work in this plant. My mother and father met each other working here in 1953. I've had two brothers that worked here, an uncle that's worked here, a cousin that's worked here, and I'm the last one. The last relative was my cousin that transferred to the Grand River Assembly. So, but that's all right here in this plant. My father was in trades. He was a pipe fitter. My mother was in production. Her last job here was in the paint shop. I had a brother that was an inspector on a trim line, and he left voluntarily. He decided to go a different route in his employment. My cousin, transferred. I had an uncle that was in the management side. He was in engineering. He went over to the became a production superintendent before he retired. So, everybody in the family has moved on. I'm the last one here. So,
did your parents retire from here?
Yes, they both retired. They're both deceased now, but they have both retired. But this is the place they met. So, this is where I come from.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally. Twinkling daddy's eye.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's been wonderful interviewing you, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been great. I've enjoyed this. Thanks for doing this.